Radio.
It is such a joy to be here sharing with you this weekend. I think this is my sixth Young Men of God conference, and I'm not sure, is it your ninth or tenth? How many years? Father Ken? You've forgotten. I think it's about nine, I think. I did my calculations. So whether or not I have been speaking or I've dropped Jonathan off to speak, I think I've witnessed every one of your conferences. And I have to say, I feel very much as like a big sister in the Lord to many of you. And it's been a real gift in my life as a woman to watch you grow as a ministry and as a company of men. Because in my life, I do a lot of work with young women. And it fills my heart with a lot of hope and encouragement. There are so many good men out there in the church, and you're all like, oh shucks, thanks. but some of the girls said, where are you off to this weekend? I said, I'm off to the Young Men of God conference. They're like, oh, can you get me some phone numbers? It's all right, Father Ken, I won't be collecting phone numbers at the back. It's not a bad idea though. Anyway, it is great to be here. And we're going to get stuck straight into this morning. I've got to keep an eye on the time because we've got lots to get through. But the theme of this year's conference is the Lord is my strength. That beautiful scripture from Psalm, this is so bad, 28. Oh, I don't even know my scripture. But Psalm 28, the Lord is my strength. And I want to suggest to you this morning that in addition to the Lord being your strength, that quality of strength is actually one of the defining aspects of what makes you a man. And obviously there's a physical strength associated with masculinity, but what I want to speak about this morning is an interior quality, an interior strength, a state of the heart, a state of the heart. In the lead up to this year's conference, Jonathan and I have had a huge few months, and I was just praying. I was like, Lord, you're really going to have to show me what you want the men to hear this year. Because in previous years, we've talked about insights into understanding women, tools to building good relationships, the key to unlocking a woman's heart. I made the point that you're sweetly deluded if you think there's only one key, and that once you've found that one key, it's going to be the same key all the time because it always changes. We've looked at expectations women have of men in their relationships. So we had a lot of fun doing that. But this year, I thought we'd take a different approach. And so what I'd like to do this morning is, I guess, build on the foundation Jonathan laid, looking at the whole Peter Pan man-boy syndrome, and turn it around and look at what that's like for a woman from her perspective in light of these three themes that I felt God really put on my heart. And those themes are, if you're taking notes, strength, adventure, and commitment. Strength, adventure, and commitment. And I think these really are the marks of what makes men, men. It separates them from the boys. And I want to tell you this morning, they really are the qualities that women yearn for in their relationships with you, whether they be romantic relationships or not. Women are looking for strength, adventure, and commitment. These aren't qualities, however, that we see in popular culture. You know, courtesy of Time Warner and Hollywood and Playboy, you've been told very specific stories from the youngest age about women, sex, love and marriage, in that order, from the youngest age. And despite attending retreats and conferences like this and going to church, you are still, all of you, even myself, deeply impacted by these forces because they're incredibly powerful. They're incredibly powerful. See if you recognise some of the messages. Virginity is a disease. You've got to get rid of it as quickly as humanly possible. Sexual conquest and pleasure is your main goal in life. Women are objects for male consumption, and marriage and children, oh, they will be the death of your soul. They recognise them? They sound familiar, don't they? Because they are in the air that we breathe. Everywhere you go, you are impacted by these messages. But please be aware that the messages you choose to expose yourself to will shape your attitudes and beliefs, and it is your attitudes and your beliefs that will ultimately determine your behaviour. And what concerns me in the work that I do is the way in which young men are taking these attitudes and beliefs into their relationships with women. The messages that we see in the relationships with women primarily centre around self and around taking. And, sorry, I'm just going to try and put this down here for a sec. They centre around taking and personal pleasure. And somehow our culture has linked pleasure with happiness. But as Aristotle said, the happy man is actually the virtuous man. What is virtue? It is fortitude, it is courage, it is self-sacrifice, it is self-control. You don't see those qualities in Two and a Half Men, do you? Actually, I like to call it Two and a Half Boys because there's actually nothing manly about that show at all. Anyway, if you're taking notes, number one, we're going to look at these qualities now in order. The first one is strength. If you're taking notes, this is the first one. I think that too often masculine strength is linked to things like aggression, intimidation, violence, large body mass, how well you can bring another guy down in a fight, how many girls you can hook up with at a party in a single night. These are all about what you can get, what you can take. But true masculine strength, real masculine strength, is actually about what you can give. As Jonathan said this morning, it's actually about what you can give and what you can give to others. It's also about how well you can resist things. Not about what you can conquer, but how well you can resist and stand against the pressure. How hard can you push? That strength has to come from within, within your heart, to resist these pressures. You know, how well do you resist the temptation to take that third, fourth, tenth look of the girl walking down the street? How well do you resist the temptation to fire the computer up at night, go online in search of that perfect girl? How well do you resist the temptation to have sex with your girlfriend before you are married to her? As I said, real masculine strength is not about what you get. It's actually about what you can give. Deep in the heart of every human person, we all carry a question, and it's grounded in our worth and our value as human beings. But it's manifested a little bit differently for men and women. For women, their core question is around beauty. They ask the question, am I beautiful? Do I captivate you? Not as a body, but in the depths of who I am as a person. Am I beautiful? But for men, it's a bit different. For men, you have a strength question. Am I strong? You know, do I have what it takes? Am I okay? Am I strong? This is your core question. And too often, men are taking this question to women to have women answer their strength question, to validate them as men. A woman cannot answer your question. She cannot do that. She's not meant to do that. And you'll set each other up for failure if you try. Years ago, Jonathan and I studied at the John Paul II Institute for Marriage and Family Studies in Melbourne. And we had the privilege of being lectured by a visiting Monsignor from Rome. And the unit was on moral theology. And there were three questions he said we need to ask ourselves in life. He said, who am I? Where am I going? And who will travel with me? Who am I? Where am I going? And who will travel with me? And you must ask and you must answer those questions in that order. You must know who you are before you go to hook up with a girl in a relationship. Once you know who you are and where you're going, then you can approach a woman from a position of strength, to offer your strength as a gift in service of her, not to take from her strength, but to be a gift. John Paul II had a beautiful quote when he said, you will never, ever, ever find the happiness, the fulfillment, even the pleasure that you're after when you seek your own end. You will never find it. He said, you will only ever find what you are looking for when you seek to make a sincere gift of love of yourself to another person, offering your strength as a gift. You need to know who you are before you approach young women. Some of you will know the story, Jonathan often tells it, but he chased me for 3 years and I wouldn't go out with him. And a lot of people think I'm so mean for doing that, but I have my reasons. And we often joke, and Jonathan often says perseverance is a man's greatest quality. And I say, yeah, well, there's a fine line between persevering and stalking. But in our relationship, he did manage to stay on the persevering side of the line, so it was all good. At one point in our friendship, I remember writing to him, and I didn't say it as harshly as this, but the bottom line was, if you think you have a chance with me, you need to go away and do some work on you first. I did soften it a little bit around the edges, so I'm nice. Anyway, he tells the story when he was at the Uni of Canberra and he read my letter and he said, he went all Oprah in his head, you know, no woman tells me what to do. And then he said, but hang on a minute, I really love her. And so he went away and he did his work. And when he came back to me years later, he came back as a man who knew who he was in Christ. He knew where he was going. He had purpose. He had direction. And he invited me to come along for the journey. And what a ride it's been, hey? No regrets. It's been great. It's never boring with my husband. It's fantastic. We've been married for 12 years now. I think we've been friends for 16 years. And it's been a great ride. The culture communicates to you that your strength as men is in your sexuality. And partially this is true, but the culture's distorted the truth of what you are and who you are. Your strength is intimately, irrevocably tied to your sexuality. But as I said before, it's not in terms of what you get, it's in terms of what you can give. And one of the key ways that you can demonstrate strength to women is in the sexual arena and your sexual choices. Because when you as a young man are in possession of yourself, in possession of your house, then you have real strength. The catechism talks about this word, the word chastity. Who cringes when they hear that word? I think it's such a daggy word. But the definition is so beautiful. The catechism describes chastity as an apprenticeship in self-mastery, where a couple waits to receive one another as a gift from God. An apprenticeship in self-mastery. How well do you master yourself, your passions, your self-control in this area? I thought in preparing this talk, you know, you can hear all this theory, but sometimes you think, well, how does this outwork in the practical? And so I thought I'd share three very short examples from our relationship to kind of give you an idea of how this looks in the everyday lived experience. The first example was when I wouldn't go out with Jonathan, and we'd socialise in a big group of friends and we'd hang out, and he didn't have a car, so I'd often end up driving him home and we'd go parking, but we never made out, we just talked. It was all good. And at the end of the night, I'd drop him home. It was Father Ken's in the room. We went parking. we did things the right way. She protests too much. No, we did do things the right way. Anyway, when I drop him home, he'd give me a hug. And he'd have this look in his eyes, and I'd be like, is he going to kiss me or what? And he never did. And I thought, what he did was he gave me this hug, and he gave me a very gentle kiss on my forehead. And obviously, we're a little bit more than friends, kind of, at that point. And he gave me this gentle kiss, and he said, good night. And he walked inside. I'm like, is he ever going to kiss me? And what it communicated to me was that this man had self-control in this area. And this is one of the things I loved about Jonathan, that before he pursued me for that, you know, for the physical side of a relationship, he was far more interested in who I was as a person, as a sister in the Lord. And he was going to protect that. And so that's what that example communicated to me. The second example was, we were further down the track, we're up to the holding hand stage here, and we went to see the film Titanic. And we went and... Well, there was a couple of scenes in it, if you know the movie, and I felt a little bit uncomfortable, and I looked over to see what Jonathan's reaction was. And I looked at him, and he was holding my hand, but he was looking down. He didn't look at any of those scenes in the movie. And my first reaction was, damn, he's a keeper. But what it communicated to me was that he made very deliberate choices about what he chose to look at, what he allowed into his mind, what he allowed to shape who he was going to become. He was a man in possession of himself. I want to tell you that what you sow in the fantasy realm today will take away from the beauty of your future marriage, if that's what you are called for. If you are looking at pornography and filling your mind with those images, don't think that one day you will get married and those images will go away, because they won't. I'm editing our boys' resource right now, and we interviewed a number of men who had sex and pornography addictions, and this is their greatest regret. And this is what destroyed their marriages. Because they said years and years of this cataloguing of images came to this point, and when they came to be with their wife, who they loved, they couldn't get these things out of their head. Please understand, what you sow in the fantasy realm today will take away from what God wants to give you. Beautiful quote says, don't take by force what God actually wants to give you by grace. If you are called to marriage, he wants to give you a beautiful relationship, a passionate relationship. Don't take that by force before your time. Don't take it by force. The third example that I'll share with you is from our wedding night. And you can all breathe. It's like, I'm not going to share too much. But after we got dropped back to our hotel, we sat down, we were talking about the wedding, and Jonathan gave me a gift. And no, he didn't jump out of a cake or sing any wild songs. He gave me this beautiful gift, which I bought this morning. It's this plaque which sits framed in our home. And it's a beautiful quote from St. John Chrysostom. And it says, I have taken you in my arms and I love you, and I prefer you to my life itself. For the present life is nothing, and my most ardent dream is to spend it with you in such a way that we can be assured of not being separated in the life reserved for us. I place your love above all things, and nothing would be more bitter or painful to me than to be of a different mind to you. St. John Chrysostom told young husbands to say this to their wives on their wedding night. If you're married, get a quote, take it home, get it framed, give it to your wife. If you're going to get married, do the same. It's actually in the catechism. This beautiful quote is in the catechism as a profession of how you intend to live with your wife. And all of these examples communicated for me that I was safe with Jonathan, not just physically but emotionally, but more importantly, that my dignity as a woman was safe. And I can tell you it has been every day of our marriage. How you act will have a big impact on the women in your life. Women are watching you. They are watching to see what you will choose to do with your strength. Who will you be for her? So the second point is adventure, if you're taking notes. Number two is adventure. This quality of adventure is hardwired into your DNA as men. It's what you're made for. You shouldn't suppress it. You shouldn't deny it. Some women will try to domesticate you. Don't let them. It's a good thing. Look at the careers you choose, the films you watch, the sports you play, the video games you buy. You know, interestingly, the average age of men playing video games is 30 years of age. Yeah, I know. And 70% of heads of households, meaning fathers with families, play video games, seeking this sense of adventure in the everyday. Traditionally, adventure was linked to things like emotional and physical toughness, conquering your inner demons, conquering the physical elements. But too often today, men aren't experiencing that. And when men don't experience this sense of adventure in their everyday lives, they will try and manufacture it and go looking for it, often in destructive places and places that are often at the expense of women. A couple of examples. I once heard it say, actually, that men who go and have extramarital affairs are not so much looking for love or even sex for that matter, but they're looking for this sense of adventure. Dr. James Dobson calls it, you know, a deviation from the straight life. That's why pornography is so darn appealing to men. It's not just that you find the female form attractive. It's because it offers you the ultimate adventure, or so they'd like you to believe. You know, you go to that picture and you take that feeling of feeling strong as a man. She makes you feel great, you know. And even better, she doesn't require anything of you. She's not going to ask anything of you. It seems like the ultimate adventure. But I know from my work producing this resource and working with young men that it doesn't leave you feeling fulfilled at all. It actually leaves you feeling deeply ashamed and like you're leading this double life. It's not the adventure that you were looking for. A lot of guys make the mistake of thinking that the woman is the adventure. But a woman in and of herself can never be your adventure because she, just like you, is looking and longing to be caught up in something greater than herself. A lot of guys use women to initiate themselves into manhood. You know, if I asked you to tell me one of the main ways that guys prove their manhood in this culture, it's driver's license, getting drunk and having sex. A lot of men are using women to initiate themselves, but a woman is what comes after you have been initiated. She comes after you've been initiated. Don't get trapped in the Playboy philosophy. And Hugh Hefner, the guy that developed Playboy, I don't want to give him too much credit because I can't stand the man, but he's very clever. As Jonathan said today, traditionally manhood was grounded in marriage and family and commitment. And he deliberately started to deconstruct that in the 1960s. So marriage and children were actually seen as obstacles to your sense of adventure and your sense of fulfillment. You know, see if you recognise these sort of sayings. You know, you better sow your wild oats before you get married. Don't get locked into that one woman for the rest of your life. You know, live it up in your 20s and 30s. Go travelling. Do your gap year because, you know, once you get married, you may as well hang up your footy boots. I tell you, it's not even just marriage. You want to talk about vocation, vocation to priesthood, vocation to marriage. The men that I know, my husband, my father, my brothers, my brother-in-law, the men that we are good friends with, the men that I am friends with who are priests, would tell you that they find incredible adventure in their commitments to these things and to their vocation. A lot of guys define a sense of adventure in terms of a solo expedition, my career, my sport, my hobbies, my pleasure, my downtime. But I want to suggest to you this morning that women and children can actually be active participants in your adventure. They don't have to limit you. They don't have to be things that actually hold you back. Instead of living for yourself, why not live for them? Instead of fighting her, start fighting for her. Start fighting for your marriage, for your relationship. I mean, that is an adventure in itself. And if you really, really want the ultimate adventure, the ultimate adventure is to live as a disciple of Jesus Christ himself. As men, you are made for union and communion with God himself. And as St. Augustine said, you have created us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. Your hearts as men will be restless. You can look for it through career, through sex, through women, through pornography, through any number of things. Your hearts will be restless until they rest in the Lord. You must know who you are in God first. He is the only one that will satisfy you. And once you've got that sorted out, then you can approach women. You'll be in a better place to approach women. So are you going okay? You still all awake? It's so different talking to guys. You know, you can be speaking at a women's conference and the girls are smiling and they're talking and encouraging you. And, you know, I wouldn't know how I'm going up here because you guys are all like... So thumbs up or thumbs down? Are you okay? Excellent. Okay. Good work. Jonathan and I have 3 children, 5, 3 and 18 months. And the other day, I'm just doing the woman thing, going off on a tangent that's totally irrelevant to what I'm actually talking about. But anyway, there's a song that just came into my head where, you know, I'll drop the kids off somewhere and I'll be driving and I'm singing along to Play School on my own. Anyway, there's a song that goes thumbs up. Totally irrelevant. I totally did the woman thing. Anyway. All right. So the third point. So we've had strength, adventure. The third point is commitment. Okay? It's a great word, isn't it? It's so loaded with negativity and resistance. Think about your own reaction just then. Commitment. What kind of feelings do you have? It'll tell you a lot about where you stand with this final quality. Commitments are things that are tested under pressure. Life will throw you storms. They will come. Jesus says that in the gospel. The storms will come. Whether or not you've chosen a vocation to priesthood or a vocation to marriage, the storms will come. But how will you stand? How will you fare when those storms come? When everyone else around you is failing, how will you stand? What will make you different? And I want to suggest this morning that the kind of man that you will be in those moments will have everything to do with what you have chosen to commit your life to. Your ability to commit to the big things, to priesthood, to marriage, to career, will have been forged in how well you honoured the small commitments day in, day out. Are you a man of your word? Do you honour your commitments to your sporting team, your school, your church? Do you honour your commitments to your mother when you tell her you're going to mow the lawn every weekend, but something better comes up? Are you a man of your word? I tell you, your ability to commit to the big things will be forged by the smaller commitments. Years ago, before Jonathan and I started doing this work, I trained as a nurse and I specialised in oncology and palliative care nurse, so nursing people with cancer and who are dying. And over the years, I had the incredible privilege of walking many people home to heaven's door. And I would sit there and hold their hands, and sometimes you get up in the bed with them and hold their bodies as they passed from this life to the next. And I tell you that every single one of them, as they lay there about to meet their maker, their satisfaction, their happiness, their joy, even they would say their pleasure in life came not from what they earned, what they built or what they achieved, but it came from their commitments to the most important relationships in their life. World Youth Day 2008, Cardinal George Pell gave his homily at the opening mass. And I remember the words very clearly. He said, "Young people, your fulfillment will be found in your commitments." Your fulfillment will be found in your commitments. And we could say so much about this, but I'll just highlight 2 trends this morning. The first is the failure to commit, and the second is the failure to honour the commitments made, because these are really impacting women, especially when it comes to relationships. So the failure to commit has 2 sides of the coin. On one side of the coin, we have the average age of marriage becoming later and later. And I'm just going to share this from a woman's perspective because I walk with a lot of women. A lot of women are in their 30s and they get to their 40s and they look around and they would love to be married. They would love to be married. They'd make great wives. But you know what? They don't see any men, just little boys. And the tragedy for these women is not only are they not going to get married, but for many of them, they will never be able to become a mother or have children. Because quite often, and I do know a number of people in this position, by the time guys are growing up, they're in their late 30s, early 40s, and then they come and they're looking for a wife. By which time, please understand, if you choose to squander your 20s, you know, living it up, living as the man boy, please realise that a woman has a biological clock and it's ticking. And at age 35, her fertility halves and then it declines after that. It's one side of the coin. Second side of the coin is the increasing tendency for young couples to move in with one another before they get married. I have a lot of conversations with young women and it's pretty predictable now. They sit down, they tell me, you know, I really love him, we've talked about marriage, but we're actually going to move in together. And we just thought we really want to get our relationship off to a great start. We're going to finish our study and we're going to save as much as we can and then we're going to get married. And I can see her questioning it, one day, maybe, you know. And she says, she always finishes the conversation, he's really committed to me. But I have to say, I say to her, honey, he ain't committed to you. Because you know what, guys? Marriage is the commitment. Please don't kid yourselves or her in thinking that you're committed. Because marriage is the commitment and we commit to that which we confess. And unless you've stood on the altar and you've confessed your love and commitment to her in front of God and a group of people, you're not committed. You're merely using her. It's a hard message to hear, but it's the truth. And girls won't tell you this, so I'm here on their behalf today to tell you, that they will go along with you. They will move in with you. They will seem like they're happy. But I tell you this, when I sit with them for long enough and they actually get to the point where they're honest with themselves, they are deeply disappointed, And they have this very clear sense that they have settled for less than what they're actually worth. That they're settled for less than what they're worth. Please don't take from her. If you are called to marriage, and you've discerned it and you've had wise counsel, then get down on one knee, propose to her, give her the most elaborate proposal ever. If you want ideas, go and see Jonathan and propose to her. Do it properly. You only need 5 months to plan a wedding and then get married. Jonathan and I got married. He was teaching at St. Edmund's, first year teacher, and we came back and we had $20 in our account. And I wasn't working. And look at us now. You know, it's not going to be the end of the world. But I tell you, if you want to undermine your relationship and get it off to a very bad start, you just go ahead and move in with one another because nothing will undermine your relationship more than that. So the failure to commit, and the last one is the failure to honour the commitments made. A lot of people make the decision to move in together, to get married, based on a feeling. I feel so in love, that feeling of infatuation. But love is not a feeling you feel. Love is actually a decision that you make. And it is a decision you make often in spite of how you are feeling. In my marriage, I don't always feel loving feelings towards Jonathan. I mean, I'm perfect, so he always feels them towards me, don't you? I got the microphone. No, we don't always feel loving feelings towards one another, but we must choose to act in loving ways. Okay? Love is not a feeling you feel, it's a decision that you make. John Paul II said, to love actually is an act of the will. To love someone is to will their good. Are you willing her good when you take from her sexually outside the context of marriage? Are you willing her good when you use her sexually? Are you willing her good? Love is not a feeling you feel, it's a decision you make. And if you're called to marriage, even if you're called to priesthood, it is a vocation, it is a calling, it is a place where you are called to love as Christ loved. And Christ loved his bride to the point where he laid down his very life for her. If you go on to be married, that is the love that you are called to. That's the love you are called to. So I just want to finish this morning with a quote from John Paul II. I'm a big fan of John Paul II. He's talking about, and he had a great interest and a great passion for human sexuality and relationships between men and women. As a priest, he used to spend lots of time with couples, married couples, learning. And he gave us that beautiful legacy, the teaching on human sexuality and theology of the body. But he has this very beautiful quote. He says that every moment in history, human life depends for its poise, its dignity, and its balance on whom he will be for her and on whom she will be for him. So this morning I leave you with this question. Who will you be for the women in your life? Who will you be for those women that you're in relationship with? If you are living consecrated life, who will you be for the women that you are called to minister to and come alongside? If you are a single man here today, who will you be for your mother, your sister, your female friends? You might not have a wife yet, but what great training ground. Stop seeing your mom as this nag who drives you crazy. Start seeing her as someone who can actually teach you about the world of women, to prepare you, if you choose to go on to get married, for how to relate to women. If you're a young man still at school, you will already know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Over the coming years, you are going to be faced and come under enormous pressure in the area of sexuality. Enormous pressure. Please carry this question with you in those situations. Who will you be? Who will you be, firstly, for yourself and your own dignity? And secondly, who will you be for the women in your life? When your mates want to watch porn, you know, who will you be for the girl in that picture? Who will you be for your future wife? Remember that what you're sowing in your mind will have a big impact in your marriage down the track. Who will you be? If you're a married man, who will you be for your wife? You might be in a season where your marriage is really difficult at the moment. You know, the kids have come along and the challenges are there and you've settled into the mundane grind of life. Spend this weekend not thinking about what's gone wrong, but spend this weekend thinking about when you go home tomorrow afternoon, who will you be for your wife? Who will you be for your daughter when she spins around in a little dress and she says, "Daddy, am I beautiful?" Will you be too busy to notice? Who will you be for her? When your son comes to you with that question, "Am I strong? Do I have what it takes, Daddy?" How will you answer that? Who will you be for him? The final quote I'll leave you with this morning is from a pilot in 1940. I read it the other day and I thought it kind of summarises a lot of what I'm saying this morning. He said, "The universe is so vast and so ageless that the life of one man can only ever be justified by his sacrifice." So I'll just leave you with that question this morning. Who will you be for her? Thank you.
That was Karen Doyle. And for more, visit cradio.org.au.